Hi there, this is Sue Nelson from the Food Talk Show, and this is our last Food Talk programme of 2017. And I thought what we'd do is we would look back at our best bits, and I've gone through all the sort of archives of this year, and we've had some amazing guests, and we've had some really interesting topics, and I've eaten some amazing food along with Paul Andrews and some of our other guest presenters. I'm going to do these in little segments, and I've got five clips for you, five of my first favourite clips. I had the pleasure of talking to Andrew Cabana at Fortnum & Mason about Scotch eggs, one of my favourite topics, and then the very inspirational Craig Sams of Green & Black. And of course, the most, probably my favourite food product of the year, 5D chocolates. I don't even like chocolates, but Russell and his amazing team are creating the most incredible tasting chocolates ever. Amazing combinations. So I'm going to let you listen to these first five. I've cut out all the introduction stuff and we've just gone straight for the best bits of the interviews. I was listening to a programme the other week, and they were saying that Fortnum & Mason actually invented the Scotch egg. Did you know that?
I did know that. I did. It's true.
It's true. Is it really? Okay.
It is true. It's phenomenal what Fortnum & Mason has produced, but the Scotch egg's probably one of its most famous.
It is. The Scotch, if anybody's listening, Scotch egg is actually, it's not, it doesn't mean it's from Scotland. Scotch means it's sort of cooked, really. So, you know, if something was scotched, it was cooked on the outside. People used to rock up at Fortnum & Mason's to go on these sort of Victorian, huge or Edwardian picnics and be loading up their hampers with stuff. And so the story goes that that's where the Scotch egg was invented. Is that, have I got that story right?
Part right. It was a call to arms for feeding travellers when they were heading out of the city. So there was a desire to have a snack en route. So Fortnum & Mason, I mean, it's ingenious bit of cooking skills as far as I'm concerned, put an egg in the middle of some sausage meat, and I don't know if they fried it in those days. They may have baked it or put it over we should consult our archivist.
I know, I like eggs, so like, how do I preserve an egg while I'm in a carton horse, you know, heading up to somewhere? And somebody came up with that amazing idea.
Flavour, texture, protein, sustenance, a lot.
Well, if you've never been to Fortnum & Mason's, you know, in terms of food, you really should go. There's some really interesting stuff. And I have to say the fresh food particularly is stunning, particularly the fish, half of which is still alive when you're down there. So watch out for the lobsters and crabs. So thank you very much, Andrew.
Pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
It is my great pleasure to be joined by Craig Sams. And Craig is the joint sort of founder of Green & Blacks, which everybody probably in the world knows Green & Blacks, and certainly I eat Green & Blacks chocolate. And the company started in 1991. Craig, can you tell us a little bit about your story? You're a real icon in you know, sort of fair trade food. How on earth did you start?
I started in 50 years ago in 1967 with a macrobiotic restaurant in business with my brother Gregory, and we started marketing branded foods like brown rice and millet and adduki beans and miso, which nobody had ever heard of before, in 1970. So throughout the 70s, we sold basically macrobiotic food, but a lot of it became commoditized. You know, everybody could get brown rice by the end of the 70s, whereas we were the only people who had proper organic brown rice.
Did people think you were mad, or do you just think you were just slightly ahead of the curve and you sort of saw that this was coming?
They thought we were either mad or bad. The American Medical Association thought we were, they called it the hippie death diet. You know, I'm not dead yet and I haven't been to a doctor for 50 years, so, you know, there must be something in it. Foods like miso and seaweed and adduki beans and sesame seeds and tahini were pretty much unheard of then. Now everybody expects, you know, gets quite grumpy if they don't find it at their corner store. So that's the big change. But it's been much slower than we expected. We thought, you know, the penny dropped for me and my brother in a matter of days, you know, and we stuck with it ever since. And it's always been a surprise that it takes people so long to break the food habits that they've grown up with.
So, Tibor, tell me about the dogs. So do you use dogs to find your truffles?
Yes, currently only dogs. There are also the story about the pigs, but it's very difficult to handle pigs once they find the truffle. So we're... Yes.
If actually on the ground, beating the pig up, trying to rescue the truffle out of his mouth. Yeah, I can see that's a bit of a problem.
So these are specific kind of dogs which are trained for finding truffles, and they're very nice, very cute, and they're very happy to find truffles. This is what I'm feeling when I see them. And we have a couple of them, and they're running around the woods, and once they see something, they start to dig, and that's it. That's the whole point. You also have to tell them to stop, and because we don't want to to damage them or something like that. The pig is eating the truffle immediately, so you have to pull it back. So with the dogs, a little bit different. Yeah. And also, as a reward, you give them a small piece of truffle sometimes. They also like to eat the truffles, like we do.
What spoiled dogs are they?
How can I train my dog up?
What dog have you got?
I've got a Cocker Spaniel. Yeah. They're very good noses.
Well, we think they're absolutely amazing. So I'm looking at this really nice packaging, actually, and a great name, Jim Jams, a hazelnut chocolate spread. I'm guessing this is a competitor to world-famous Nutella, but this has got a great taste award, and it says it's lovingly crafted. And I'm with Lucy as we're wandering around, and Lucy's our researcher. She's got her eyes on this already. It's a big, huge spoon stuck in it. It's very gooey. Do you have a quick taste of that? And I'm going to talk to Kevin Bass, who's the owner, and he owns and runs the company with his wife. Oh, you're saying already. Is it good? I'm going to have a taste.
It's absolutely delicious.
Kevin, you also make jams, don't you, as well, as hence the name Jim Jams. But tell me a little bit about this chocolate spread. Is it an easy thing to manufacture? I could imagine it's quite difficult.
Yeah, we kind of looked at different manufacturers for it. We come up with the recipe, and then we looked at different manufacturers to kind of help us with that recipe. So we wanted to come up with a healthier alternative to well-known chocolate spreads.
You're allowed to say Nutella, we don't mind.
Well, we realised that the amount of sugar that's contained in all chocolate spreads, that's including our own label and the leading brands. My children kind of pestered the chocolate spread, but then we kind of looked at the labels. My wife's from a health and wellbeing background.
It frightened you,
didn't it? It's frightened. A standard jar of all the chocolate spreads on the market contain 57 sugar cubes.
57 sugar cubes in a jar?
In a jar of standard chocolate. Well, not standard, just all chocolate spreads in the UK.
And that's like a 350 gram jar.
Yeah, so we kind of looked high and low for searching for a healthy alternative. There wasn't one available. There wasn't one on the market, so we felt there was a huge gap, a crucial gap in the market for a lower sugar chocolate spread. So that's where the kind of idea came from. And then we kind of wanted a fun name, a bright brand.
It's a really lovely name.
We wanted a fun, nostalgic name, and we wanted, we felt that kind of Sunday morning with your family and your Jim Jams still, putting on crumpets, pancakes.
Just made the pyjama stripes as well.
Oh, down the packaging, it's clever, isn't it?
One in three children start school suffer from tooth decay, which is a shocking statistic. Mm. So we really felt that it's all about the taste as well. Mm. So it's got to be better for you. Great taste and a lot less sugar. That's our free.
You can definitely taste the hazelnuts in this. That's really nice and nutty. The problem with children, of course, is that you can say for breakfast, well, can you have this and can you have muesli? And it's really hard to get kids to do that. And yet they do need breakfast, and if they're running around all the time. And if you can get some nice wholemeal bread with a little thin spread of that on, that's really not so bad at all, is it?
That's lovely. We know it's a guilt-free treat. You know, I don't mind giving my children. Now, at the moment, with the chocolate spreads that are on the market, you kind of every once every
in
few
while,
weeks.
Yeah.
And we actually stopped buying chocolate spreads because we realised the shocking amount of sugar in them.
Yeah.
So that's why we're not telling people not to buy them, because we're not advocates of telling people what to do.
Yeah.
But we feel that people should have a healthier choice.
I know you've got a website which is Jim Jams, which we all use for our shortcut for pyjamas. So Jim Jams -spread.co.uk. And is it any of the supermarkets? It's all
selling really well in Ocado. It's about to launch in Holland and Barrett this week, Wednesday.
Good. Thank you so much, Kevin. You're quite converted on that one, I can see, Lucy.
I'm just going to give that to your son,
are you?
No, you're going to keep it for yourself. That's typical. Okay. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
We're at the Speciality and Fine Food Fair 2016, and it's day one. It's Sunday. It's absolutely jam-packed full of people, and I have the most amazing looking chocolates in front of me. I mean, they literally are works of art. There's a chocolate that's like a yellow dome with speckled red on it. There's a beautiful square chocolate with what look like moons on there, a sort of copper colour. They almost look too good to eat. And they're made by Fifth Dimension Chocolates. And I have Russell Pullen with me. Russell, how do you make these beautiful chocolates?
They're all handmade, and that's why they look so nice. It's a lot of care and attention goes into making them.
I can see that. And do you actually make the chocolate yourself, or do you get the chocolate in and then make it into shapes?
Yeah, I get the chocolate in. So to me, chocolate is like flour is to a baker. Somebody else will make the actual chocolate, and then I just make that chocolate into nice products.
So you're almost a sculptor.
Yeah, you could say a chocolate sculptor, yeah.
And I know you use single sort of origin cocoa. Can you just tell us exactly what does that mean? Because there's a lot of bad chocolate around using vanilla and sugar and all sorts of other things. What gives chocolate its distinctive flavour for me is the actual cocoa bean itself and where it comes from. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, single origin, basically, it's like a grape. A lot of people will recognise grapes go into wine, and you get a grape from a different region, say France, has a different flavour from the same grape, maybe grown somewhere else. And cocoa is exactly the same. So if I get chocolate from Colombia. Now, the South American beans have got a completely different flavour characteristic from the ones in Africa. And single origin is really, you can go down to a single country. So chocolate from Colombia is single origin. You can actually go down to regions of that country as well. So some of my chocolate, I use two types of chocolate from Colombia from different regions, and they both have completely different flavour characteristics. There's one which comes from inland and it's kind of higher up, and another one which comes from around by the sea level, and they've got two different flavours. So single origin is basically taking on the flavours from the terroir. It could be the salt that comes from the sea, it could be the soil. It's all to do with the weather conditions and everything.
So it really is, it almost is like grapes growing for wine, and very much so. Now, Christy is looking, yeah, she's sort of dribbling a little bit, really. So Russell, what do you recommend that Christy should taste first? And just describe the chocolate, one of your favourite ones here, and what's in it?
Well, my favourite one at the moment is a new one I'm doing, which is the mint and miso. One thing that I like to do with chocolate is I like to work with flavours. That's the one there. I like to work with chocolate and flavour. Now, to me, chocolate has its own flavour, but it can work very, very well with other flavours. And I like to match the flavours with the chocolate. So I like to get it so that the flavour that you get when you taste that mint and miso, you also get the chocolate flavour come through as well. Yeah.
Oh, that tastes lovely. You wouldn't think miso would go with mint, but you get that lovely salty hit and a little bit of mint at the end, and then followed by the smooth chocolate.
Yeah, that's what I want everyone to get. To me, it's the chocolate that's the star, and I'm just trying to sort of like make it a little bit more interesting. So you're getting that chocolate, but you're getting other flavours as well.
Really, really nice. I do like the miso in there. What do you think, Sue?
I've just tasted that, and you know I'm not a great fan of chocolate, but that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I actually like miso soup quite a lot. I don't really have miso in anything else, but I do have miso soup quite a bit. Weirdly, that tastes like miso with caramelly chocolate.
Yes.
And actually it's fine.
Yeah, it works. You must have a very good flavour palette there to think of that idea, because it really does work. I guess it's a bit like salty caramel, though, like just like onto the next level of that.
My next level from salted caramel is this one, which is a milk chocolate one, but this is soy caramel. So it's using soya sauce. Now, soya sauce is very, very salty. So I was thinking, what can I do to salted caramel to make it a little bit different? And it's like soya sauce. It's an unusual because people think of savoury, but I think it works really well.
This is bizarre. You should see Christy's face. Okay, she's eating soya sauce chocolate.
It's so weird, but so nice. And I'm not just saying that. What do you think? So it really does. It like just shocks you a little bit, doesn't it?
Wow. I so like that. It is odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is delicious.
We're like two little kids in a sweet shop.
That was amazing, wasn't it? The bit about the truffles, particularly Treble. When he bought them in, the smell is so distinctive for truffles. You cannot disguise it. It's absolutely gorgeous. And a top tip there for you, make sure you use dogs if you're hunting for truffles and not pigs. Otherwise, you'll be fighting with your pig to grab hold of them. Second part here, we spoke to Just Eat, Ben Carter, Just Eat. And Just Eat is the most huge company now and almost taking over the world. And the world of takeaways and deliveries is a real trend that we're going to see, certainly for 2017. And then, of course, we've got Mushtax, who I mean, again, an incredible takeaway operation. And people are going to be eating food that they haven't cooked themselves, that they're either going to eat at home, you know, or take away, you know, a lovely picnic or something. And again, this is a trend to be watched. And of course, my favourite, the fat gay vegan. Let's have a listen to these three. Ben, is there anything that you're spotting here as well, just coming through as new trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, so a big thing for us is obviously all around food delivery. And if you look at packaging and if you look now at the advances in terms of actually getting food from A to B, and the most complex dishes can now be delivered as in sort of perfect condition. So I think that's a really interesting one. It's an area we're investing in. But also, again, in terms of branding within delivery as well. So we all know the importance now of branding that last mile. Again, giving that customer that end-to-end experience. And I think what's really interesting from a Just Eat point of view is how we really tap into our independent restaurants and really take them on that branding journey, not just Eat branding, but also co-marketing with them.
Yeah, and I'm finding a lot of people are realizing that collaboration is key. So we're beginning to talk to people, and yet they say, oh, can we have this other person with us, because it's actually becoming a vital part of our business. Can I just move on? I've been on your stand, and you've got a lovely little thing that I want to take home with me, which is a robot. It's a delivery robot, and it looks like, it looks like a dog, actually. No, don't laugh, it's lovely. And apparently you're trying to develop this technology, and I'd quite like it to pop up at my door, because I feel like I want to speak to it, although it's just a robot. What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, so we're working with a company called Starship Technologies on trialling robot delivery. I think, again, if you talk about customers' expectations, particularly in urban centres, they want food very quickly. And so what we're looking at is how we get food to customers quicker. So the reason we're trialling the robot is really to work out how that could actually work. So we've got live trials going on in Greenwich at the moment. We're one of the launch partners. It's a cute little thing. We're trying to work out what to call it. But I think more seriously, it just really is a nod to the future. And it shows that, as I said, 10 years ago, we disrupted the market once. We have to continually disrupt this market. This marketplace, the food delivery marketplace, is so dynamic. It doesn't stand still, and Just Eat won't be standing still.
Well, I'm sure that's the case. I mean, I always think there's going to be drones flying around, but actually I wasn't really thinking there's going to be these little dogs that are wandering around Greenwich or whatever it is. They're so cute, and I just want one to bang on my door soon. So I hope that comes to market soon. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem at all. Thank you.
I'm speaking to Ajmal Mushtaq, who owns the most amazing business, and I'm joined by Jeremy Eames, who's our Tech Talk presenter. Ajmal, I know, I've been sitting judging the Innovation Awards with you here at the Takeaway and Restaurant Innovation Expo, and I know that you have probably the biggest restaurant in the whole, the restaurant kitchen in the whole of the UK. Now, is this really true?
Yes, it is. I built Britain's largest kitchen 2 years ago to cater for the growing demand in the takeaway and home delivery business. It's phenomenal, the size of it. And it's made our life so much easier.
So you've just shown me a video of it, a sort of 360 degree video. It looks enormous. It looks like the size of, oh, I don't know, like a basketball court, I think, sort of size, something like that. Yeah. And I can see that there's something like 50 or 60 chefs all working inside there. It's absolutely huge. Why did you feel the need to make a kitchen that big? And how has it made you more efficient?
Well, the Mushtaq's business has grown phenomenally over the years. And all I'm doing is just fulfilling the customer demand. And to feed the demand, I had to build a very big kitchen. So I've got 55 people working in that operation. And we cook the food fresh and deliver it within half an hour.
And sorry, what types of food do you cook? Is it just one particular type, or are you cooking all sorts of different cuisines?
It's one brand of food, and that is proper Indian food. It's I've got 10 dishes on the menu. It's the 10 dishes that we eat at home, and that's what I've got on the menu.
I love Indian food. I love Indian food cooked properly, and I don't go to Indian takeaways anymore because, in general, I feel quite disappointed. I quite like sitting in a proper Indian restaurant where they've got a really good kitchen, but you know, the takeaway version of Indian for me is gone down and down and down. Are you reaping the benefit of that because you just do really good home cooked food?
Totally. We're not using any artificial colorings, any processed meats, nothing out of a jar. It's just traditional cooking, exactly the same food we eat at home, and that's been, it's driven massive volume to the restaurant. It's been really, really successful. And my parents came to this country back in the 60s and they opened up their first restaurant in the 70s. And they only knew one, they only had one skill, and that was how to cook great tasting Indian food. And I've simply carried that tradition on to this day.
But scaled it up.
Yep.
So essentially what you're saying is the food is no different. What you've tried to work out is how can I do that en masse without losing any quality?
Exactly. So we've basically scaled up, whereas previously it was a smaller restaurant or a smaller kitchen, they can only do X amount. We've now built a new kitchen and we can really cater for an unlimited amount of customers now.
An unlimited amount. So tell us, say, on a Friday night, which for me, when I come home from work, Friday, I feel like I need a little bit of spice in my life, a little bit of chili. Not what you think, Jeremy, not what you think. A little bit of spice. And how many people are you serving on a Friday night, for example?
Possibly in the region of 1,000 meals on a Friday night.
Wow.
That's amazing. But making sure you get the quality, making sure it's all hot, making sure, you know, that people are coming back time and time again.
Hello. So we're at the Allergy and Free From show, and we've got a very interesting visitor that just knocked on our pod, haven't we, Brady?
Indeed.
We have got the Fat Gay Vegan. Hello.
Hello. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Also known as Sean.
Yes. I prefer Fat Gay Vegan, but Sean's okay too.
Okay. How are you finding the show?
It's amazing. One thing that strikes me every year when I come here is just the number of people. It's a real jostle to get through the aisles.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so busy today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But what I also really like about the show is how they have the different sections separated. So obviously my interest is in veganism.
Yeah.
I just need to look for the pink carpet.
Yeah, and you're there.
That's it.
Yeah, it's great. So what have you been doing at the show? Are you promoting anything or...?
Well, not officially. I run a vegan PR company, so I support a lot of companies, that, especially small independent vegan companies, so I like to drop in and see people I either work with now or I've worked with in the past. I like to see what new products are coming around. I write a blog, fatgayvegan.com, so I do a lot of consumer reviews, so I want to make sure I'm not missing out on any of the latest products. I want to be the first to break stories.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to know where everyone's at in the industry.
Yeah, there's so much innovation, isn't there, in this industry, so it's never going to stand still. It's going to be...
There's always something
always
new.
Yeah.
And I suppose this year it's all about coconut. Have you noticed?
Yeah, we've got some behind us. So you were just mentioning just before we came on air that your vegan beer festival has really taken off.
It's amazingly popular. London Vegan Beer Fest is in its fourth year. This year we're taking over a park and a pub next to the Thames in Hammersmith.
Wow.
The pub is going completely vegan for the day. We're expecting around 1,000 people. And it's so incredibly popular. We're also taking the festival to Manchester and Glasgow later this year.
Taking
as well.
It on the road.
Yeah, I mean, people can find out more information at veganbeerfest.co.uk.
Okay.
But really, the event isn't just for vegans. Like this show, like the Just V and the Allergy Free From show, I'm all about inclusiveness. I wouldn't want someone to think they can't come to my event just because it's called vegan.
Good, because I fancy it.
Oh, okay, come along. Now listen, this year it's for everybody. The first year we've allowed dogs to come along.
Bring a might dog. Live to regret that, I don't know.
Well, maybe more live to regret. Babies are allowed.
Oh, even worse.
Well, no, but you know, in the past we've not been in venues that have been family friendly.
Yeah,
there've
sure.
been live bands, there's been beer on the floor. This year we're outside in summer, a park next to the river. We want to make it as inclusive as possible. We don't want anyone to feel like they can't access it.
Sure.
Now, we have dedicated gluten-free food stands. Of course, everything's vegan, but we've also got dedicated gluten-free. We've got gluten-free beers and ciders. We have wine for people that don't want any of that. We have soft drinks and smoothies for people who don't want to drink. It's really a community event that's geared at anyone. But if they want to access information about veganism, or they want to understand veganism, or cruelty-free living, or compassionate shopping, or drinking in a non-threatening way, that's what we like to create.
Wonderful, wonderful. For my next section, I've included the rather ruder bits of 2016. First of all, we've got Pop a Ball. And talking about balls that are popping in your mouth is obviously quite a difficult thing to do without breaking out into fits of giggles. And then Robbie from Stoats, who was quite clear about trying to spread his oats across the world. So listen to that one. He's a really nice guy. And then the very, very naughty Charles Bourne, and who obviously has spent his whole life and his whole family making sausages. And again, it's something I really struggled to keep a straight face. And Charles was deliberately taunting and baiting me to... to embarrass me while I was on the radio. And then one of our favourite places to go of all time is indoors. And speaking to Jane, who runs indoors with her partner Gary, which is a gin bar, and we were there for about an hour. And you can definitely hear on this recording that actually we're increasingly getting sloshed as we talk our way and drink our way through Jane's wonderful gins. And then a really great guy, Simon of Chili Jam. If you want to know how to barbecue, he's your man. Paul, we've been here for 2 days and we've been tasting all sorts of different things, and our lovely producers and other people that met come along, we see their products, we taste it, we have a chat. We're going to do something slightly different this time.
We are, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to unbox something.
We're going to do a bit of unboxing, because we do like a little bit of unboxing.
We do.
And I've got the lovely Jules Quinn with me.
Hello, Jules.
And she's bought her product in a box.
In a box, which is handy, really, isn't it? Because we're going to unbox
handy.
It.
It's very handy. So I have no clue what this is. I haven't been briefed beforehand, have you?
No.
Okay. So, Jules, just look pretty at the moment, because we're not going to ask you about the product. We're just going to try and work it out for ourselves. So we have a lovely box here. It's can fit in my hand. It's not that big.
It's a cube.
It's a cube.
A cube about 2 inches square.
It says, pop
cubed.
A ball, one telescopic straw inside. Do you want to have a look? Strawberry flavour bubbles which burst in your mouth.
And
add some bursting bubbles to your drink. So,
and then round the outside it says bursting bubbles, bursting bubbles, bursting bubbles.
Bubbles. Okay.
Do you know what? I think it burst in bubbles.
I think so.
And there's a yellow straw.
Thing.
Which is a telescopic straw.
Thing. I don't know. Oh, wow.
Oh, shall I undo the straw?
Yeah.
Which comes in a nice little plastic sheath.
Thing. Yeah. Pop a ball.
Oh, look. And then you expand it.
Yeah, suitable for vegetarians. Once opened, replace the lid and keep in the fridge for up to 2 weeks. Do you drink it? What is it? I don't know. Have a look.
Right.
I suppose you open it.
We've got a plastic pot.
Yeah.
Full of...
Do you know what it looks like? It looks like roe.
I was going to say, it looks like huge caviar.
Oh, yeah. It's a big caviar.
It's strawberry salmon-covered coloured balls in a liquid. So let's take the foil cover off.
Okay, so what it says is, you add my bubbles to your squash, cordials, milkshakes and cocktails.
Right.
Even use me as a topping for ice cream.
Okay.
So, and you can float it in Prosecco, for example. And I presume you can eat it. go on then. Just can you eat it, just in case you can't, and then you can die and I can just watch.
Okay, well, there's a straw. So yeah. I'm assuming
you,
the
you
straw...
need to stretch it.
Well, I tried and I couldn't because I'm weak. That's it.
That's it. Okay,
between a pair of us, we've extended the straw.
Yeah, go on.
So do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to dip the straw in and suck one up.
Yeah, I think you should. I think that's what you're supposed to do. I don't know.
Mmm. Oh, that was fun.
Is that weird?
Oh, that was fun. Have a go.
Have you got any diseases?
No, have a. Okay. That was fun.
Okay,
have a go.
Right.
Hey, wasn't that fun?
Mm. That is weird.
Yeah.
Mm.
That is really cool, isn't it?
Well, I described that then. So there is some liquid in there.
Yep.
And I've just sort of used this straw.
I don't think you're actually supposed to do that.
Aren't you?
Oh. No, you're not.
So the size of the balls actually goes through the straw, so you can see that there. Like,
yeah.
And then it means that actually I've sucked up about four or five of those. And then
so
like, they just
disappeared.
They just disappeared in my mouth.
I don't think you're supposed to use the straw to actually do that.
I think
what you do is put some of those in your drink and then drink your drink with the straw.
Ah.
Yeah.
Should we ask Jules actually what
you
doing?
Should we ask Jules what you... But I actually quite enjoyed...
I would.
Doing
I'd,
that,
I'd
to
go
be
for
honest.
That. Yeah, interesting.
That was the most
and,
fun I've had
strawberry.
Today.
Bit strawberry.
Oh, it's very strawberry.
So Jules, tell us all about it.
So Pop Ball is a range of bursting juice bubbles. You add these juice bubbles to your favourite cold drinks, such as cordials, cocktails, and Prosecco. You just add a little spoonful into your drink, and then you suck it up with a telescopic straw that is provided in each pack.
So... let me get this right. I've got my glass of Prosecco, and I put like, I don't know, four or five of those in there or something, which looks amazing.
Yeah.
But then when I drink my Prosecco, am I supposed to drink the balls or?
Yeah. So you would drink your Prosecco, get some balls in your mouth, and then bite them.
And then bite them. Because actually, you could just swallow them straight away, because mine just went down straight away.
That's what I did when I...
Yeah. Jules, hold on, just try and keep a straight face. Or you could just, you know, you just drink them as you're drinking your normal drink.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, do what you want with these balls, but they taste delicious. So.
They do taste delicious.
Let me enlighten you about casings.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, no, it's important because...
Do you like
actually...
your sausage straight, madam, or do you like it with a bit of a bend in it?
Well, that's interesting. You should ask that question.
So your glasses are steaming up, madam.
Glasses are steaming up, but also it depends what day it is, I think.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, if we're going to make a straight pudding...
I'm so glad this isn't television because I'm very late. Yeah,
so if we're going to make a straight pudding, then we'll use an ox middle,
right,
which will give you a straight pudding, and or else we'll use an ox runner, which will give you a bent pudding.
Okay.
So you're on the latter, aren't you? I'm thinking.
Well, I'm desperately trying to not ask Charles how to.
No,
what
I'm
the difference
move on.
Is.
I'm going to move on to the ingredients now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm feeling a bit outnumbered by men here. So
I tell you a bit about size, madam?
No. Okay. Please don't. Let's just. Concentrate. Let's just go on to the ingredients. So what?
You were talking about succulents, weren't you? And
so,
I'm a great believer that.
Pork shoulder.
Shoulder, yeah, shoulder trim, shoulder chaps, part of the collar. You know, these are meats that don't actually render, but give you juice and succulents. Mm. And so I want people to bite into a sausage. It should be a fairly soft eat, but there should be succulents.
Mm.
And if you ever picked field mushrooms and then cooked them in a frying pan with a bit of bacon... It's that juice that comes off that is so delightful.
Mm.
And that's the meat juice that I'm seeking to retain within the sausage. And that's why we use bread, by the way,
right,
or bread crumb. So it absorbs those juices within the sausage. So you have a succulent, and isn't the word succulent good? It's a kind of succulent, sizzling sausage.
He's doing it for me, sir. I don't know you, but he's doing it for me.
I've just bit into Charles's sausage earlier. What I'd like to say is you know, you get these artisan sausages, actually, they're so densely full of meat. And they go, you know, we've got 95% meat in. Actually, I find those too harsh and they're not juicy. And I think the nice thing about these is that they are lovely sausages. They're really,
I think a sausage has to be fairly approachable.
Mm.
And a succulent soft sausage is actually probably where we are with this.
Right.
Is there any chance we can finish this interview now? I'm really struggling.
You fancy another bad one?
No, I'm really struggling. I would really recommend those. I think they're
fabulous product.
I would almost say actually that's the best sausage I've ever had. Just tasting Warner Edwards, Victoria's rhubarb gin, and Jane's saying that this is probably the thing that everybody comes here for. I've just tasted it. It tastes incredibly strong. It's no stronger than any other gin. It's a normal 40%. But, wow, what a taste explosion. It's just literally blown my head off with rhubarb, I think. That is definitely my favourite since we've been here. And all we're having it with is a little bit of water at the moment. Lucy.
Very rhubarb-y. When you smell it smells quite sweet. I wouldn't say it's a favourite of mine, I think, because it is a lot sweeter than the others. It's still really nice and flavoursome.
See, I don't taste it's actually sweet. I do taste that it's quite fruity. It doesn't end sweet, I think.
No.
I hate it when you know you get alcohol and it actually ends sweet because it's all cloyy.
Aftertaste.
Yeah, it hasn't got an aftertaste. No. Chrissy's got her head buried in the glass there.
when you smell it, it smells like it's going to be quite really peppery. Yeah. Pepper, rhubarb, quite a nice smell. But when you taste it, Lucy's right, you have got that slightly sweeter edge, but like you said, it doesn't end with it.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Now, Jane's got some pomegranate and basil mixer, which she won't tell us where she got it from because it's top secret. So can we have a bit of pomegranate and basil mixer with the rhubarb? Yeah. It's in there. All right, go.
That's what I
can tell. I can smell that basil. Oh, God, I just so love that. I really love that. Yeah. When we finish recording, I might have another one of those, a proper one, instead of just tasting little bits.
I wouldn't call it that little.
No, okay.
We've got a few of it.
Yeah, and so we've tasted 9. We're going to put all those on the website, and obviously it really does depend on your particular flavour, you know, the things that you really like. Christy, any particular favourites for yours that you can remember that we've started through the 9? can you remember any?
The celery one that we had, that was really nice with the zest. And I also really liked the first one that we tasted, which was Martin Miller with that strawberries. It really was lovely.
The Mason's Yorkshire gin is definitely one that you know, just if you wanted a good, you know, sort of straight, gluggable, normal gin. Lucy, your favourite?
Well, Christy's just stolen my two favourites, but my third favourite was Pinkster gin with the boozy berries, definitely.
It's what she can eat them afterwards. Raspberry profile.
Delicious.
Okay, well, it's been a really great pleasure to be at Indoors Micropub, and if anybody's in the sort of Kent area, anywhere near Folkestone or anywhere near Hythe, or you're going on to the Channel Tunnel, you really do have to pop in here. There is some great, great, great beers, really good local beers, and also some great ciders. But for us girls, we're here for the gins. Thank you very much, Jane.
Thank you.
I'm just going to describe what you look like, if you don't mind, Simon.
Yeah,
so Simon's wearing a red, what sort of hat is that?
A steampunky style top hat.
Okay.
Big red top hat with
a tasty feather. Pheasant feather, and he's got, on top of his hat, he's got some, they look like Harley Davidson sunglasses or something, but that's
big goggles, it's sort of steampunky style.
Big goggles, and then he's got some, like, a goatee beard, and he looks a little bit like Bill Bailey.
Yes.
So Simon really looks like Bill Bailey, actually.
Like, more hair.
He looks like Bill Bailey's brother, but with hair. Bill Bailey's younger brother.
Bill, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Picture on Twitter for everyone to see.
I think we should. Yeah. He's definitely the character of the show here. Lucy, that's gone down now. What's your...
I had a slight water and ice.
It
was absolutely delicious.
Thank you.
I preferred it to the garlic one.
This is made with I had a load of ghost pepper smoked in mesquite. So the ghost pepper being an Indian chili.
Mm.
It's one of my favourite chilies to work with because the flavour's not too overpowering. And when you cook it, it has a real delay to the heat coming in. So when you add it to soups or casseroles or stir fries, it's not flattening the flavour. It's not the first thing that hits your palate.
Yeah. I see it here as well, you've got a taller jar. And that's called Rib Tickler.
Yes, a sauce I'm launching, basically.
Is this the launch at the show, isn't it?
It's been in development last year. It's pretty much one of the first times it's been out. It's definitely the first time a lot of my customers, as in my farm shops, have seen it.
Can I have a taste, Simon? Do you mind open the bottle?
That's the medium one. That's quite a hot one. It's three in a range, mild, medium, and hot. Different paper, I don't know.
And you've described it on the label as Rib Tickler, a sweet, sticky, smoky sauce for ribs, wings, or just chips. And I'm on the number 3, hot.
This is that's a medium version of it in there for you. So with that, you can literally just pour it over a rack of ribs.
Is that the medium? I'm so rubbish with chilies.
You are a
win,
aren't you?
I'm really rubbish at chilies.
I know it's not great radio, but I'll just show you on my Facebook page what I've been doing with it recently.
So Simon's showing me his iPad now, and there's a picture that he's got. Is this your Facebook page? Picture that he's got on his Facebook page, and he's got a garden fork, you know, that you dig the garden over with, which is a brilliant idea because I've never seen this before. And he's stabbed a pheasant with it. And what have you covered? What sauce have you covered?
And that's with the rib tickler. With the rib tickler sauce.
And he's so barbecuing it, and it looks
just
incredible.
Cooked over fire, oak.
I've never seen anybody use their garden implements to actually barbecue with. It's a great idea.
No, but I think I'll be doing that in the summer.
I'm going to be doing that in the summer, so it's a
I've
fantastic
done a few
idea.
Actually, there's that one, and then did a rack
we'll
of
post,
ribs.
Really we'll post that picture onto the foodtalk.co.uk website because I've never seen that before. It's amazing. That's a really good idea.
And you've also
got some ribs that have been stuck in, you know, one of those things you rake the garden with, you know, to pick the leaves up, a lawn rake. So he's stuck the ribs on the lawn rake, which is a really another good way, great way of cooking over a barbecue. Well, we love this. You're having an amazing show. I know people are queuing up and really, really interested in these. So I hope you get.
Thank you very much. No, it's been a really good little show for us. Well, not little at all. It's huge.
Yeah.
But I've met a lot of very interesting people.
We love the labels. I really like the products. And thank you so much for letting us taste them. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Cheers,
my pleasure.
Simon. Just better mention your website, haven't you?
Yeah, it's very easy. Thechilijamman.com.
Thechilijamman.com.
And same on Facebook and Twitter.
And definitely go on Facebook and have a look at how he does his barbecues. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good.
This one looks interesting.
Yes. So the muesli sort of is fairly obvious, I guess, in terms of brand extension.
Quite a special one. It's not an obvious muesli.
No, I mean, in terms of you expanding into, you know, other areas, that sort of makes sense. And it looks, the packaging and everything looks lovely.
Thank you.
Chipotle chili oat cakes.
This is pushing the boat a little bit more, right?
Not so obvious brand extension.
So we used to make oat cakes, and we used to sell them at farmers markets, and they were like currency. They were so popular. So we used to have a classic one, a rustic one, as well as a cracked black pepper. We cut them when we had a rebrand around 3 years ago, where we thought about what we were doing and where we were trying to aim ourselves to, and we added a lot of color and made our brand quite simple and quite kind of efficient in the way that it was displaying what we do. So the oat cakes then took a bit of a change, and recently we brought them back again because we kept on getting notes left on our vans around Edinburgh saying, Mr. Stokes, please bring back your oat cakes. So
seriously?
We got, it's true. Yeah, so these are back by popular demand, and so we brought them back, but we added a bit of a twist. So instead of a cracked black pepper, which was a beautiful flavor, we noticed that with these trends going towards chili, especially in chipotle or chipotle.
I quite like chipotle.
But it depends. How do you say it, Gemma?
Chipotle.
We definitely think. Yeah. But the chipotle or chipotle, they're gorgeous. We use chipotle chilies, which I describe them as a cousin. It's a cousin of the chili and a nephew of the pepper in a way. So it's got a heat to it, but it doesn't have a spice to it. And we use, again, two types of Scottish oats, ground down even more so that they're nice and fine.
Yeah.
And then we add a little bit of rapeseed oil to give it the crispiness. So we don't use any dairy in these, which is quite unique for an oat cake. And they're wheat-free, as well as just like the rest of our range, which is...
The thing I really like about oat cakes, it feels like they're a little bit old-fashioned sometimes, but they are superb with very, very salty cheese, like gorgonzola or Stilton.
Yes,
or
these with a blue cheese.
You're
in heaven with a glass of red wine or beer next to it.
Oh, they're very crispy
and spicy.
So you're very sensitive to these things.
Usually
it takes around 10 to 15 seconds for
it. Yeah, I've just got that.
For the hit. Yeah.
I like it though. Nice.
You like spicy.
This is one of my favourite products actually. We put these into pubs, we got them into supermarkets, we sell them online obviously, and in pubs they go onto like their cheese boards and their meat boards, and then we get a little plug on their menu, which is always fun.
Slightly spicier than normal, was it?
Oh, really? Is it build up a bit?
A little bit.
Okay.
That's good though. Can you imagine that with some cheese?
Really nice with some.
Yeah, you like cheese, don't you?
Yeah, I do love them. Really nice.
So it's Stoats. Where can people find your products? You've got a really good distribution, so they should be able to find them in supermarkets.
You should be able to find us in most supermarkets now, especially in Tesco's and Waitrose in England. Those are our two largest accounts. We're national with Tesco's and Waitrose that take four of our porridge bars, so the ones that we tried at the beginning. They're soon be getting our chocolate dark orange dark chocolate, as well as our apple and cinnamon, our raspberry honey, which is one of our most popular flavours, blueberry honey as well. These are in packs of four and multi-packs in the cereal bar section. And in Scotland, we have a much stronger distribution, but we're trying to push everything south, as ever.
And can I go on the website if I want to find out more about where you are?
Yes,
so,
of course.
What's the website?
The website is
eatstoats.com.
That is correct.
Eatstoats.com. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. I did enjoy the chilli sort of oat cake, but I do like the porridge bar.
Please go and find us on Facebook, just on Stoats, and on
Instagram's
Twitter.
Amazing.
Yeah, Stoats. Check out our Instagram. We got this amazing girl called Georgia who does all these amazing pictures, and we got to go check them out. It's got all of our new ranges on it as well, and our new bars. And please,
Robbie,
come and see
you
us.
You love oats, don't you?
I love oats. Yeah, it's a good product.
You're an oat evangelist, aren't you?
Oh, well, you know, I do have my fair share. Yeah.
Can I just ask, what did you study? Did you go to uni?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So, and what did you study?
I did my final degree was in a Master's in Sustainable Rural Development.
And now you're an oats ambassador, really.
Yeah, well, I was working. Yeah, I did some languages. I'm half Italian. I quite enjoy spreading our oats internationally as well, which is good fun.
I think we won't sort of highlight you spreading your oats. We'll just get people to go to the website.
Please do. Yeah, come and visit us.
Yeah, really nice to meet you. Thank
really
you.
Nice to meet you too, Sue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks.
Did he actually say spreading my eyes?
Yeah, internationally.
Thanks for that, mate.
Well, there you go. I don't think I'm going to comment on any of those interviews, really. I think I totally embarrassed myself. But we really do have great fun on the Food Talk show, so some really good interviews there. And finally, I've got two here. Two very, very... I would say informative and very knowledgeable and very caring people in the world of food. And that's the guy from Whole Foods Market. Really love their business model and the way they look after their producers. And then Guy from Food Rush. If you want to know about food, he's really got his finger on the pulse of all the trends that are happening. And I would subscribe to the Food Rush. If you're interested in food, it gives you a really great insight into what's coming around the corner. So let's listen to Benjamin and Guy. Hi, I'm at the Bread and Butter event that's going on in London in the middle of November, and it's a pretty cold, horrible day out there. I've got Benjamin Woodgate with me and Michael Webber, and they're from Whole Foods Market. And if you're ever in London and around Camden, you'll know the Whole Foods Market because it's just the most fabulous shop, and I spend a fortune when I go in there because I just can't help it. Benjamin, if I could ask you first, just tell us a little bit about Whole Foods Market, because it's not just in the UK, is it?
No, Whole Foods Market was born in the USA. It started in Austin, Texas in 1979 by a very idealistic bunch of hippies, and they wanted to create a supermarket that was safer. And a year later, Whole Foods Market was born. We're now we've got 440 plus stores. We're in America, Canada, and in the UK. And in the UK, we have 9 stores and 1 online shop. So if you're in London, there are 7 stores you can visit. Camden is one of our oldest ones, very small, but our large flagship store is at Kensington High Street. And if you have ever been to that shop and you are a foodie, you will absolutely be blown away to see all of the produce that is out. I mean, it's really like an indoor market, and we run all of our teams like an individual business. And so the team leader, we don't have managers, we have team leaders. The team leader in the bakery truly owns that bakery and puts all their heart and soul into it. So you'll find a lot of very passionate and very proud team members with some really fantastic displays and merchandising. It truly is a feast for the eyes and a fun day out.
I often go there just to go and get something to eat, let alone do my sort of weekly shopping, because some of the food offerings are brilliant.
Absolutely. We have a lot of people that come in and they want to just grab something to eat. But what we want to encourage people to do is to shop the aisles and get to know our grocery department, get to know our butchers and our bakers. And crucially, I think people in London especially, you know, we've only got 2 hands. So we're now offering some delivery services to help make it easier for people. But no, getting people into the aisles is important. Everything you buy in a Whole Foods Market is what we would call clean. It's It's been independently inspected by our team. We've got a very strict list of ingredients we will never allow. Broadly, that's no artificial colourings, flavourings, preservatives, hydrogenated fats. But it goes way beyond that, and it goes into our healthcare as well. The skin is the biggest organ on the body, and so we think that what you put on it is just as important as what you put in it. So you can come into a Whole Foods market and know that it's a safe harbour, that we've done all the hard work. You really don't need to read the label. And so getting people to start by buying a fantastic burrito or freshly made juice is really a bit of a gateway product for us, in that we wanted to get people into the aisles and to adopt this lifestyle of eating and living better.
Great deal of trust in your brand is important, isn't it? Michael, can you tell me, there's a lot of people here who are trying to pitch their products. They've made these lovely things and they're trying to get them listed on supermarkets or whatever. I know quite a lot of people approached you today. What advice would you give to somebody who's just made some amazing product? We've seen some great ones here. What advice would you give them in order to get them into the mainstream?
I think the biggest thing is to know their market. Their products are unique and special, and we look for stories behind the product. What makes it unique? Those are the things that attract us the most. But then again, there's a high-quality product out there, and it might not be unique, but it might be better quality. So we stand behind what we put on the shelves. So, of course, we want to see products that meet our strict quality standards, but we also want it to be delicious. At the end of the day, it has to be delicious, and we want people to come back over and over again to get that product.
So the standard is you've got to have something delicious, and without something delicious, you've got no chance. We see quite a lot of same products that come out, and I guess that innovation's really important, so something that's new and different. But if it's the same as a lot of other products, it's got to be the best of the best.
Well, yeah, it has to be the best of the best. And a lot of that comes down to, bacon isn't very innovative, but, the sourcing of the pig, maybe it's a heritage breed. Maybe it's in the process or the type of smoke that they use, traditionally oak, but what other flavors can they coax out of it? You can still innovate in existing known products as well.
And then something that's coming up, I think you're actually doing this on your site as well as a discussion topic, and that's the future of meat.
Mm.
Now, I know Denmark is about to introduce a red meat tax, which is a very interesting move
to
make. And I know the Chinese government is trying to reduce consumption by 50%. I mean, that's a hugely tough target.
It's a very ambitious target, yeah. Which
enormous.
Is funny because they've only recently kind of got a flavour for red meat.
Yeah.
It's a really, really big issue.
There's also this thing about Meatless Monday. Mm. So there's this Meatless Monday movement. And therefore, it does seem to me that this thing about meat being unsustainable is starting to be tackled at political level, because it's seen as something in the future that's going to be a really big problem.
Yeah.
What are you finding through your research?
Yeah, so we even did a whole issue around this for the first kind of magazine, which we released on the new iPad platform, which was all about the future of meat. And the short version of the problem is the population is growing at a huge rate. We're estimated to hit something by like almost 10 billion people by 2050. And these people all want to eat. They almost all of them want to eat meat in some way, because that's kind of the common diet in the...
Well, it's a signifier of affluence as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. And that's why China is suddenly kind of demanding all the meat, because they're, raking in the money. Mm. The current farming system and the current ways that we produce meat is just not sustainable, because the cattle, they take up so much space, there's so much energy required. We have to grow masses of food just to feed the animals.
Don't they say that global warming is more down to cows than it is to emissions, car emissions?
Yeah, so it's like if you added up all of the cars, the buses, the planes, everything... The greenhouse gas emissions from cattle is more than all of that combined.
So it's going to be a problem. So we're going to see more of legislation, I think, and more probably pressure groups as well.
Yeah,
but you've got to come up with great protein alternatives, haven't you?
Yeah, and there are some fantastic ones out there. As much as some people kind of go, that's weird, the whole insect thing is getting very, very popular. I think maybe just because it's it's weird and different, or not weird and different, but it's new and a different approach. And so a lot of people are looking at it and going,
I actually like crickets, and yeah, I've eaten quite a delicious few roasted crickets and things like that. But
you see, you're a typical old-fashioned carnivore, aren't you, Paul? And if people are going to come up with meat alternatives, they've got to be appealing, well, haven't they? You're not going to do it out of the goodness of your heart, with all due respect. What you want to do is you want to have a really tasty alternative, and then you're going to do it, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what kind of staggers me here, where the dichotomy is here, is on the one hand, you're talking about sustainability and a green environmental thing, and the only way you can overcome that is with genetically modified stuff, to make it work. And the very same people are complaining about genetically modified stuff. So you've got this huge dichotomy over what you do.
What I am finding, there's some interesting producers who are really looking at producing stuff that has not only, the great protein levels, but actually the taste and the texture and the smell and the consistency. Absolutely, and that's what you've got to get right. It's not just the taste.
One of the features that we did on that topic specifically was there's this thing called the Impossible Burger, which is currently being tested in the States. They were, I can't remember the name of the restaurant. It will probably come to me about 20 minutes later, after we finish, no doubt. And they did a trial there, and then they've recently opened up in California in a few different restaurants as well. And the idea of this is it's a plant-based burger, but it even bleeds like meat through introducing heme protein. It's just some of the stuff that is happening in this space to come up and to solve this massive issue is really, really exciting.
Mm. And it's not just about I'm being a vegetarian for personal ethical reasons. This is a problem that we're all going to have to solve.
Absolutely,
because it isn't actually sustainable to keep eating red meat at the levels that
and anything that people can do to just even if it is to, so the meatless Monday concept is you just don't have meat one day a week. Or even if that's too much, then you can just do one meal a week, or one meal a day even. Yeah. So we did a 30-day plant-based challenge in the run-up to the publishing of this magazine, The Future of Meat, and that was it was quite tough, to be honest. But we went plant-based for 30 days.
Mm. So 30 days, wow, that's it was quite tough. A challenge.
Kylie, my partner, she said, right, we're going to do it for 6 months. And I said, no, we're not. We're going to start with 1 month and we'll see how we go. And it was tough.
Guy, thank you so much for being on the programme.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, Food Rush, check it out. And that's another programme finished.
In the can, as they say.
In the can, on the week that Donald Trump became the next...
The 45th President of the United States.
And Toblerone changed the shape of their chocolate. I mean...
I don't know which one I'm more angry about, actually.
Seismic week, as far as everybody's concerned.
Absolutely. We live in interesting times, as the Chinese want to say.
Very, very interesting times. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out in due course.
Definitely.
But at the moment, there's lots of interesting stuff going on in food technology and the whole food industry. And we will continue to bring you those news and interesting folks like Guy to talk about it.
Yeah, and if anybody's got anything they want to catch up with or talk to us about or got great suggestions for the show, don't forget to go on to foodtalk.co.uk or do a bit of the old Twitter.
Yep. And on the website, on the Food Talk website, you can download podcasts.
All of them. Yep. In fact, we said this is our 40th show, didn't we?
Absolutely.
There's 40 podcasts at least on there, if not more.
Cool. So thank you for joining us for another Food Talk show. It's been... an absolute joy to spend an hour with you. And we will be back with you next Thursday with the Food Talk Show with me, Paul and Sue.
Goodbye.
Cheers.
So there you have it. I'd really like to thank all the kind people that have been on our show, who've given up their time, who've bought us products to taste, who've explained what they've been doing with great passion. So thank you to everybody who's taken part in the Food Talk Show. I hope you'll listen to us next year. We've got even better and bigger and great stuff next year too. And food is really the place to be in the UK at the moment. It's a great sector, and I wish you all a very, very happy 2017. Thank you.
Go digital. Go Channel Radio. Visit our website, channelradio.co.uk.
It was a theme she had on a scheme he had, told in a foreign land, to take life on earth to the second birth, and the man was in command. Push!